Lost and Found. Found and Lost and Lost Found.
Hallo und willkommen zu Lost and Found in der April-Ausgabe 2022. In den nächsten 120 Minuten sind wir auf The Village, der Whisky-Messe in Nürnberg, zu Gast, die von 1. bis 3. April stattgefunden hat. Zunächst sind wir bei Nagneen. Es geht um ein umweltfreundliches Konzept, Whisky zu produzieren. Danach geht es zu Loch Lomond Distillers, bevor wir in Dublin bei Pierce Lines zu Gast sind. In Stunde 2 schauen wir uns einen neuen Whisky von Loch Lea an, bevor wir mit Bacardi Whisky über deren Spirituosen sprechen. Ein wichtiger Teil der Whisky-Messe The Village ist die Pueblo del Ron. Wir werden zu Gast sein bei Rum aus Fidschi, aus Jamaika und aus Mauritius. Zwischendurch wird es den einen oder anderen Schnipsel aus Aufnahmen während eines Messerundgangs geben. Ich wünsche viel Vergnügen beim Zuhören, am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. 2017 öffnete die Brennerei Nagneen ihre Pforten und der erste Whisky kam genau während der Corona-Pandemie. Nagneen bezeichnet sich als CO2-neutrale Biobrennerei. Mehr über Nagneen an der schottischen Westküste in den Highlands erfahrt ihr von einem Mitarbeiter der Destille im Interview im englischen Original.
My name is Matthew Hastings. I am the blender, brand ambassador, photographer and videographer for Nagneen.
Nagneen is there to be very different from other distilleries in the UK, in Scotland, because it's all organic and you have a very small carbon footprint as well.
Yes, that's true. So Nagneen is designed from the ground up to be the most sustainable distillery in Scotland. Every decision that we take is about making the most delicious whiskey with the least possible impact on the planet. So we do that in a load of different ways. We are 100% organic and we only use organic Scottish barley, which is really good for low carbon mileage in moving barley to us because it's made in Scotland. It's great for soil health, for CO2 sequestering in soil, for biodiversity in Scottish farmland, for cleaner water courses, no pesticides, no fertilizer. It is a greener way of producing barley for the planet as a whole. And it helps improve Scotland's sort of sustainability credentials. That's sort of the start. There are so many things that we do at the distillery that are all designed around being better. So we are 100% powered by renewable energy, which means we use a biomass boiler on site rather than fossil fuels to distill with. Just by making that one switch, there is a 90% reduction in carbon emissions, which is an enormous carbon saving. On carbon, we are net carbon zero at the distillery, and we're carbon neutral field to gate in our supply chain. So the majority of what we do is carbon neutral. Some of that is achieved through offsetting because it needs to be at the moment, but the actual figures are so ludicrously small that we find it hard to find comparisons. But our entire operation for an entire year, our actual carbon footprint is around 240 tons of CO2, or something in that region, 240-270. It's the equivalent of one commercial return flight from London to New York. For everything we do for an entire year, and we offset it, so it's zero. We are also the first whiskey distillery in the world to bottle their whiskey in 100% recycled glass, which has a 40% lower carbon footprint. So like they're the really big things. There's so much more. We clean the distillery mostly with enzymes rather than using caustic, which is better for the planet. We have a closed loop water system, so we recycle between 80 and 90% of all of our water on site. We are a zero waste distillery, so in 2019 is the last year we have data for. We recycled or reused 99.97% of all of our waste. Every decision, every little detail is about doing things in the best possible way for the planet whilst making great whiskey.
And it's also about delivering things, about how the people working in the distillery come to the distillery. These small footsteps are important as well?
Oh, 100%. The main reason that Nagneen exists is to help the rest of the single malt Scotch whisky industry. Us by ourselves, we're not going to have a big impact. We often say that Scotland didn't need another whiskey distillery, but it did need to kick up the arse about being more sustainable. So that's what we do. And the more that we can do, the more that we can showcase what's possible, the more everyone else pays attention. The more this practice spreads and the greener Scotland becomes, which is the ultimate goal.
I heard from a distillery, they told the people, so we are going to leave away the boxes around the bottles. And it's for environmental reasons. And then I learned, yeah, it's good for the environment, but you did it because you didn't get the raw material.
Yeah. So Nicknean, since we've launched the whiskey, we've always had optional gift boxes. So if you buy direct from us on our website, you can spend £2 more and get a gift box, which is basically the cost of a gift box. So that if you don't need a gift box, then you have the option of not having a gift box. I'd like to see more distilleries do that. I know places like Bruichladdy now have that in place because they have tins, which are even more sort of environmentally unfriendly from a carbon perspective. But you now have to opt in. If you really want a gift tin, you have to say, I want a gift tin and I'll take it. But all of these are just small steps. There are so many things that you can do in packaging to have overall quite a big impact on the footprint of Scotland. For our whiskey bottles, every little detail is considered and we try to do the best possible thing. So not only are we 100% recycled glass, we, very romantically, we specify a low reject rate, which means that you'll often see bubbles and imperfections in our glassware. As long as it still holds whiskey, we'll take it, which means we're not wasting these bottles. Most bottle manufacturers, if they made a bottle with a bubble in it, they'd throw it away. And that's chaos. That is such a waste of carbon, of raw material, of time, of energy. We couldn't justify that. So as long as it works, we take it. The design of our bottle, we print directly onto the bottle to reduce labeling. And the ink that we use is water-based, so non-hydrocarbon and better for the planet. The label that we have at the top is a paper label that's obviously fully biodegradable. The tamper seals that we use are a bioplastic made from wood pulp, so they are all natural and fully biodegradable. You can put them in your compost at home if you want. You can eat them if you want. And then because we use natural cork and wood for our closure, currently our packaging alone is carbon negative by 1.4 tons of CO2 per year.
Are you using recycled cork?
No, so it's fresh cork. The sustainability aspects of cork is an end-use product and it is a natural carbon sink. You are paying for a tree to grow perpetually almost in Portugal and you're just harvesting it every 7 to 9 years. And what you're harvesting is the carbon that's been stored by that tree and you're using it. What we do is we take one of the lower grades of cork which fit our shape and size. So we make the most use out of the cork that we can with substantially less waste. So we do the best we can with what is probably the best solution carbon-wise for sealing bottles of whiskey.
The whiskey started with a perfect timing when the corona pandemic started.
Yeah, so I was hired to specifically look after to bars, restaurants and hotels in April 2020. So I did none of that for a year and a half. The original goal was to have a bigger focus in bars and restaurants because what we offer is so different compared to everyone else in Scotland. The best way of getting people to engage with that is to get them to taste it, get them to try it. And we weren't able to do that for a very long time. We worked with some sampling services, we did a lot of tastings online, we did what we could. But it was a very difficult time to launch the product in the way that we intended. We turned out that we did very, very well. A lot of people had a lot more time to spend at home and a lot more disposable income to spend on nice things, on frivolities. When we originally launched our first whiskey, it was called Anir, which means maiden in Gaelic. So there was the double thing of it being female and maiden, but also being the first whiskey that we'd ever made. We auctioned the first 10 bottles for charity. So the charities we supported, there were two different bar and hospitality charities because we knew everyone in the bar industry was going through a rough time. There were two environmental charities, one a tree planting scheme, the other a sort of sustainable farming scheme. And the last one was for the Morven Community Trust. So the people around our distillery, our neighbours essentially, making sure that they're doing well in this time. We auctioned the first 10 for charity. Bottle number one sold for £41,004, which broke the world record for an inaugural release from a distillery four times over. And in total we raised, I think it was about £96,000 for charity from selling 10 bottles of whiskey. The demand was unbelievable. We're very, very proud of what we managed to raise, but also the immediate impact that Nagneen has had on the whiskey community.
When we look at the regular Nagneen organic, it's in batches. It comes in batches. What is a batch? How many casks are there?
So every batch that we make is limited by the size of our blending vessel currently. We are in the process of building a new bottling hall, so the batch size will increase because we're selling too quickly, really. But we make 5,040 bottles per batch, which is a very geeky maths joke. 5,040 is called a highly composite number, which means it's like the opposite of a prime number. It means it's more divisible by more numbers than all the other numbers around it. And the idea was that we're making a very accessible whiskey. I want to use the most accessible number. For the actual batch, there's 13 and a half casks currently in every batch. So that will be 5 bourbon casks and 8.5 STR red wine casks, which, because they're slightly bigger, the ratio works out to 65% STR red wine to 35% bourbon. The bourbon casks give us a lot of our distillery profile, so we have the juicy fruits, some vanilla, some coconut, bits like that. The STR casks add a lot of depth and warmth and complexity. So STR stands for shaved, toasted and recharred. The process is we take 5 to 7 year old Spanish or Portuguese red wine casks, shave 2 millimeters off the inside, toast and then rechar the cask. And that process not only rejuvenates the oak, so you have a fresh layer for maturation, which is going to be more impactful, it also caramelizes any of the residual wine sugars that are left in the staves, and then those compounds fall into the whiskey very easily. So we get a lot of movement, a lot of complexity, and a lot of warmth from those casks at a very, very young age. So every batch of whiskey that we've made legally is 3 years old. The whiskey inside is sort of between 3 years and 2 months, 3 years and 10 months, something like that, for the majority of what we've made. But it's because our distillery is designed from the ground up to make young whiskey. In 20, 30 years' time, we'll still be making three-year-old whiskey.
Oh, and there won't be a 20-year-old cask? There will be, for sure.
There will be old casks. So 80% of what we produce at the distillery is called Young Recipe, and it's designed to be young. It uses 2 different yeast strains, it has quite tight cut points in the still, it makes a great spirit that requires very little aging. 10% is called Old Recipe, which is a single yeast strain, wider cut points in the still. It's designed to be more like a traditional single malt Scotch whiskey. I'm not even allowed to taste that until it's 10, and I'm in charge of all of the casks, so I've no idea what they're like yet. It's very unlikely that we'll ever put age statements on anything, because it's not part of the inclusive message that we want to put out. We'll always give you all the information. You can go on our website, there's batch transparency. I'll tell you every detail that we possibly can, legally can, tell you about each whiskey. But we won't ever say, oh, here's a Nagneen 10, I don't think. And of the old recipe stock, because it is made so differently, because I have a feeling it will taste quite drastically differently, there's a very, very strong chance that we won't even call it Nagneen. It might be released, but it might be released in the same way that Springbank have multiple recipes. They have Hazelburn, they have Longrow, they have Springbank. They are 3 different distillates that make 3 different whiskies. We will have multiple different fermentations that make multiple different whiskies.
So is it really possible to be organic when it comes to wood and the casks?
So organic certification for our certifying body, the BDA, doesn't require the use of organic casks. It's one of those impossible questions from a practical point of view. How do you organically grow an oak tree? Like it doesn't really exist. You can't organically farm oak trees, really. Because the BDA consider oak to be a vessel, so it's there to hold the whiskey. And from our perspective, from like a flavor perspective, oak has less of an impact on what we're doing than our spirit does and what we're trying to produce for Nagneen. So the only ingredient that is required to be organic, to make organic whiskey, is the barley. So for the last 4 years, we've used about 10 farms in Scotland, mostly on the east side. So they range from right in the north down to just north of Perth. We've changed malt supplier this year, and we're moving to just 2 farms who are both based up near Inverness. And it'll be nice getting to work more closely with them so we can build on how they farm and we can improve their operation so that they're minimizing their carbon footprint, maximizing their impact on beneficial elements for the planet, which will be really good. And maybe even potentially look at some biodynamic farming, which I would love to do more for Nicknean in biodynamics, because it's fascinating. It's very weird. It's very voodoo magic, a bit hocus pocus, but a lot of the fundamentals are really interesting, and I do think it will make incredibly engaging and delicious whiskey.
So at least the casks are reused. So do you get fresh casks? Are you going to the Speyside Cooperage? Or
well, we don't use Speyside Cooperage. We use 2 different cask brokers for the majority of our casks, and then we have a couple of different people that we use for the more specialized stuff. So all of our bourbon casks are sourced from Kentucky Bourbon Barrel, who are based out in Kentucky, and they source from Jack Daniel's, Buffalo Trace, Early Times. They find good American oak casks that have been used once for us, and we take them. It's a very simple relationship. The STR casks that we have, and we also have sherry casks that haven't really been released yet, are sourced from Jose Miguel Matam, who are based down in Jerez. They're one of the main sherry cask providers for Scotland, and they do an incredible job of sourcing the red wine casks and then STR processing them for us, and also finding really, really good sherry casks for us. The other suppliers that we use, it's very sporadic, and it's finding legally permissible but interesting wines and beers and other things that we could use. So in the warehouse we have Galvados, we have Pinot de Charente, we had Tokaj, we have tequila. We are hopefully getting some Ribasaur casks, the French red sweet wine. Not much, but bits, and it's there for me to paint with. It's more colours on your palette to create more interesting things with.
So you use different strains of yeast. So how long is the fermentation process?
So everything we make at Nicknean, we do 5 runs per week that make 1 batch. So 1 weekly batch will contain 5 different runs. 2 of those runs will have, well, actually, all of the runs have 2 yeast strains. We use what's referred to as Anker and Fermentis. Anker is a distiller's yeast. Fermentis, traditionally, is a wine yeast. And they work in harmony to produce both the alcohol we need, some traditional Scotch flavors, and then some very untraditional Scotch flavors. More of those juicy fruits, more of those fats and oils. The fermentation times, 2 of the 5 runs per week are 68 hours. Which is quite long for Scotland. The other 3 are 114 hours, which is incredibly long for Scotland. I got to taste the 2 different spirits side by side the other day for the first time, which is really interesting, because normally they're all blended together. And I can see why they work so well together, why just having long fermentation isn't the option. The shorter fermentation adds a lot of bright, sweet, simple, delicious flavors, and the longer fermentation adds the complexity, the weight, a lot of the fat, a lot of the chocolate flavors in our new make. And they, like, each individually is good, it's really good. Combined, it's exceptional. So that's what we do.
We are looking forward to have more whiskies from Nicknean, even if it's quite young. It doesn't matter, because it tastes quite good. That's why the people are buying it. But you don't only have whiskey, you have a spirit drink as well. What is this?
Yes, so the first thing we released, Nicknean Botanical Spirit. The botanical spirit came about from tasting our new make. We were tasting the recipe and going, wow, this is delicious. I can't believe how yummy this is now. What can we do with it? And the part of selling whiskey in the world, selling new make is possible. Some distilleries do it. But new make is not really a product. It's not something that you go back and order. It's something that you taste once and go, oh wow, that was interesting, and then never order again. And that's not something that we want to make. So we worked with Heriot-Watt University and some students there, and with our team, and we created the Botanical Spirit. So it's the new make, the young recipe new make, redistilled with 10 botanicals. Six of those botanicals are more traditional gin botanicals. So it's juniper, angelica, licorice, coriander, grapefruit, and chamomile. And then the other four are locally foraged around the distillery. And that's heather, sorrel, bog myrtle, and thyme. And those are really the focus of the recipe. The overall goal of McNeill Botanical Spirit, apart from sneakily getting gin drinkers to drink whiskey without them realizing, was to create this sense of terroir. It's our spirit. It's the things that grow around our distillery. Things that grow around our distillery turned into just a really engaging, complicated, bright, floral, weighty spirit. And you use it the same way you use gin. So you'd have this with tonic water and it's delicious. I personally really like it in stirred down drinks. So things like martinis and Negronis, I think it works really, really well because it retains a lot of that texture and that weight. So when you make a Negroni with Neo Botanical Spirit, it's not juniper forward, there's not a lot of juniper there, but it is texture forward. It becomes glossy and silky and just like it's lovely.
So, and we have one very special edition at this fair. It's the Cask Strength German edition. Will Cask Strength be something typical from McNean, or is it very special?
Cask Strength is something we almost never do. As I said before, a lot of McNean's goals are based around accessibility, and high ABV whiskey is not accessible. It's not an easy thing to drink. But we do know that there's so many people out there that love high ABV whiskey. This particular cask, we were gifted two different sherry casks from Jose Miguel Martin, our sherry cask provider. There were two hogsheads, so two smaller casks, 225 litres. They had a PX version, Pedro Jimenez version, and an Oloroso, like a cream Oloroso sherry version. The Pedro Jimenez version went into Quiet Rebels, and the cream sherry version was the single cask for Kirsch. So they were experiments. They're probably not going to be repeated, or certainly not repeated anytime soon. And the sherry cask, it doesn't particularly taste like McNean. I don't think it's a very good example of McNean. I think it's an incredible example of sherry cask Scotch whiskey. It is so rich and thick and jammy and spiced. The ABV really cuts through a lot of the weight. So even at, I think it's 59.6% ABV, it's very drinkable and very balanced. We did try a few different ABVs. Normally when we do single casks, I will pick an ABV that I'm happy with. This was the first one we tasted, and we're like, no, we're not touching it. Like this is exactly how it's meant to be right now, and that's what I'd like people to taste. And the feedback on it today has been utterly incredible. Everyone is so enamored with what we've managed to create with it. So hopefully we will repeat it again in the future, but it's a way off.
Let's come back to the impact of McNean and the organic footprint. One thing I really liked about, you already told about Campbelltown, when a distillery gives back to the people around the distillery. So it's not only to make money, it's give jobs to people and the region and so on, to help it flourish, which is not happening on Isla. How is it with McNean?
So I think we do a good job. We try and employ as many local people as we can. There's not that many people on the Morven Peninsula, but we do have, you know, a few local lads. We've built housing at the distillery for people to move into and integrate themselves, become part of that community. Because we are so remote, there is a genuine rich community there of people that just, they need to be together to help each other out. Like, it's cold. It is occasionally very miserable. It is very remote and hard to access. We are miles away from the nearest pub, from the nearest shop. So there needs to be community there. A lot of what we do, obviously there's the charity donations, but I think the best initiative that we're involved in is B Corporation. So B Corporation is a globally recognized system for measuring a business's impact on the planet. So B stands for benefit. You should be benefiting these three elements, and the three elements are profits, people, planet, which is very simple. So everything we do should always be, obviously being a business, making money, we can't be a business and lose money, but it should also be about the people that you work with, the people around you, the people that you sell to. All of that is measured, and the planet, so your environmental impact. B Corp is slowly growing around the world. There's a few distilleries now that have picked it up. The score is scored out of 200 points. It's impossible to score 200 points. But if a normal business, if a standard business that doesn't really do anything for the planet or doesn't really do anything for its people, if they entered what they do and they were reviewed, they'd probably score about 50 points. To qualify as a B Corp, you need to score 80 points. If you're a really good B Corp, you'll probably score like 100, 110 points. We scored 135.6. We scored 70, I think it was 77 points alone on environmental impact. And a lot of that is just in the way we operate, all those extra credentials that we have for making the greenest possible whiskey. We scored extra points for our cooling system, which means we recycle 80 to 90% of our water on site. And we scored extra points for chemical reduction. So the majority of distilleries in all spirits categories use caustic soda to clean their equipment. Because it's very efficient, it's very cheap, but it's obviously a chemical that's not particularly good for the planet, and it goes into watercourses and it's hard to dispose of. It's not ideal. For every piece of equipment at our distillery bar one, we use enzymes to clean. So the enzymes are natural, they do a fantastic job of cleaning the equipment. It's a bit more expensive for us, it takes a bit more time, but it is very clearly the right decision for the planet. So that's why we do that. On the community aspects, It's just being as open with our community as we can. There's only a few hundred people that live on our peninsula, and we try to engage them whenever we can. If they want to make the journey, they can come and visit us, and we will do the best we can to be as hospitable for them as we can. We give them advance warning on when whiskies are released. We try and do what we can to keep sort of our area in check, so we don't. We don't operate 24 hours a day. We don't have HGV lorries going up and down the road all the time. We try and maintain the road and the local infrastructure as much as we can, as much as we're responsible for, to make sure that life on the west coast of Scotland is as undisturbed as possible.
If you have a vision, how would Scotland look in about 10, 20 years if every distillery at least adopted a few parts of Nagneen's policies?
Well, the goal in less than 20 years' time now is for single malt Scotch whisky to be net carbon zero. So that's a target set by the SWA, the Scotch Whisky Association, who are the governing body for Scotch whisky. They want every distillery to be net zero by 2040. We are obviously the first, about 20 years ahead of schedule. So in 20 years' time, hopefully, every distillery is carbon neutral, at the very least, if not net zero. So that will be looking into different fuel sources, looking into more sustainable distribution models, looking into just every aspect of what we do. It seems weird as a whiskey distillery say, oh, we make whiskey. We do so much more than that because there are so many different elements to producing a bottle of whiskey. So it's about looking at that entire supply chain. And the best piece of advice I can give to any other distillery is just to start asking questions. You don't even need to make big changes to what you're doing. The most impactful thing any distillery can do is to talk to their supplier and ask questions. If they're getting stock in and it's wrapped in cling films, go, why is that wrapped in cling film? And you start a chain of events that means that the businesses that you work with go, oh, well, maybe if we want to keep them as a customer, we need to be more sustainable. So maybe we'll look at this and maybe we'll change this. We've had it with different warehouses that we've used for distribution where we've said, have you considered a recycled cardboard machine for packaging? So you can take your waste cardboard and rather than disposing of it or burning it, you can shred it and turn it into packing solutions. And they go, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. All of, like that immediately made them better for the planet. And it was just a question. It was just saying, could you do this? Have you considered this? And that is how we're going to see the most change for Scotch whiskey moving forward.
I have a last question. It's about, I like smoky peated whiskies. And Nagneen doesn't provide me with that. Why?
No, Nagneen will never, ever, ever peat whiskey. There is nothing more environmentally burdensome than cutting up a natural carbon sink and burning it just so that your whiskey tastes smoky. I understand why. I understand historically why it's done. I understand the benefits of it. I like peated whiskey. I think it's utterly delicious. But there is no way Nicknean could justify burning a natural carbon sink just to impart a flavor. I would love to see us look at alternatives, and we probably have to work a lot more closely with the SWA to find something viable in that realm. If there is another kilning option that's a bit more environmentally friendly, if there's another way that we can add a smoke flavor without resorting to peat and without resorting to that, well, specifically that kind of smoke. There's a broad spectrum of phenols and a broad spectrum of smoke flavor that we could be playing with, and there's loads of different ways of getting to those broad flavors. It's just not a lot of it is technically legal with single malt Scotch whiskey. So it's about asking questions. It's about starting that dialogue by talking to the people that are in charge of the rules of Scotch whiskey and saying, have you considered this? Could we do this? Will you allow us to try this? And that's the same for everything that we do. I would love to have a more robust refill scheme for our bottles. It's something that's not permissible under the Scotch Whiskey Association currently, because you need to bottle single malt Scotch whiskey in Scotland. That's a law. I understand the reason for that law. I just think from a modern perspective, from a sustainability perspective, it's an outdated law, and I think it should change.
It's out of question to just import cask from Islay or something like that, heavily peated.
Again, all it's doing is moving the problem along one option in the chain. We have discussed using a peated cask and having the influence that way, but it still means that we're promoting the burning of peat. And again, I understand. I don't foresee it changing, and I also don't want it to change because I like peated whiskey. But if I don't think every distillery needs to do it. I certainly think we don't need to do it. And it's not even just from an environmental point of view. From an accessibility point of view, smoky whiskey is not the first step on anyone's whiskey journey. We want to be that first step. We want to be the people that draw a beer drinker, a wine drinker, a gin drinker into the world of whiskey. We want to be that safe space where they can say, I love those flavors. I love mixing it, and we heavily encourage mixing and stuff. So making cocktails, making just whiskey sodas, making highballs, that's an incredible way of getting more people engaged in whiskey, and that's how we're going to make sure that Scotch whiskey still exists in 200 years' time, by getting as many people as possible engaged with whiskey and enjoying whiskey.
Danke an der Stelle nochmal an Matthew von Nicknean, den ich auf der Whiskymesse The Village in Nürnberg getroffen habe. Im Web findet ihr Nicknean unter nicknean.com.
John Anderson, my Joe, John Anderson, my Joe, when we were first acquaint, your locks were like the raven, your bonny brow was brent, but now your brow is belled, John, and your locks are like the snow. But blessings on your frosty pow, John Anderson, my Joe. John Anderson, my Joe, we'd claim the hell together, and money's a county deed, John, we had we in another. Now we mun totter down, John, and hand we'll go to sleep together at the fet. John Anderson, my Joe, John Anderson, my Joe.
Wir bleiben auf der Whiskymesse The Village und landen bei Loch Lomond, ebenfalls in den Highlands.
Hallo, ich bin Sebastian, ich bin der Brand Ambassador von Loch Lomond und ich freue mich, dass ich mich heute mit dir unterhalten kann. wir haben so eine Brennerei, die liegt ungefähr 15 Minuten mit dem Auto von uns entfernt. Glengoyne kennt eigentlich auch fast jeder. Und die haben das tolle Spektakel, dass die Brennerei in den Highlands ist, die Warehouses in den Lowlands. Und bei uns ist es eigentlich so, dass wir eigentlich eine Highland Distillery sind. Bei uns ist der quasi so die Linie, die man zieht, ein bisschen weiter unterhalb von uns. Aber du wirst bei uns auf den Flaschen niemals irgendwo Highland Single Malt Whisky draufstehen sehen, weil wir dafür zu sehr variabel vom Stil sind. Wir haben, also ich würde uns, was den Hausstil anbetrifft, eher in der Space Height sehen.
Loch Lomond ist auch nochmal was Besonderes, weil sich es in den letzten Jahren auch als Marke verändert hat, auch wie das Ganze optisch in Erscheinung tritt. Vielleicht ein bisschen Infos zur Distille, die ja ganz unterschiedliche Whiskys machen kann, auch Grain machen kann etc.
Also wir sind, ich sag mal so, die Brennerei, die die größte Range hat, die es in Schottland gibt. Wir sind die einzige Brennerei, die ein Single Blend machen kann. Wir machen einen ganz normalen Grain Whisky unter einem Dach, genauso wie Single Malt auch. Dazu machen wir noch, wie wir gerade hier vor unserem Roll-Up stehen, wir machen einen Grain Whisky aus 100% gemälzter Gerste, also aus den Zutaten, wo man eigentlich Single Malt macht, auf einer Column Still, also auch sehr ungewöhnlich. Seit 2020 Oktober haben wir das Ganze auch nochmal als Peated-Variante. Also wir haben ein Portfolio, ich glaube, das ist so ein Schlagbar in Schottland.
Wie hat sich das denn entwickelt? Woher kommt das, dass Loch Lomond so eine hohe Bandbreite an unterschiedlichen Spirituosen herstellt?
Also der Beginn der Loch Lomond Brennerei liegt zurück zu einer anderen Brennerei, und zwar Little Mill, die für viele gerade Lost Distillery-Freunde natürlich sehr netter Stoff ist, aber leider mittlerweile unbezahlbar. Und der Grundstein wurde eigentlich gelegt, auch von Little Mill, dass sie nach ein und demselben quasi Stil eine Brennerei errichtet haben bei Loch Lomond in den Häusern, wo wir auch heutzutage sind. Die gleiche Still 1:1 kopiert, dass man noch mehr Little Mill Whisky produziert für die Blended-Industrie. Und nach hat man halt andere Stills auch nochmal geguckt. Wir haben mittlerweile auch ganz normale Pot-Stills mit dabei. Und seit Mitte der 90er Jahre eine eigene Küferei, dass wir eigene Fässer quasi, also dass wir die Qualität der Fässer selber bestimmen können. Und seitdem haben wir auch nochmal eine eigene Grain-Brennerei, weil wir nicht mehr abhängig sein wollten von Grain-Brennereien aus den Lowlands. Irgendwann sollten wir für die gleiche Charge, die wir sonst immer für unsere Blends quasi geordert haben, sollten wir auf einmal das Doppelte für weniger Menge bezahlen. Und dann haben wir gedacht, okay, wir wollen unabhängig sein und deswegen wollen wir alles unter einem Dach machen. Und das war so Mitte der 90er, war das der Grundstein für jetzt den ganzen Liquid, den wir heutzutage auf Messen trinken können.
Loch Lomond Group ist so ein Begriff. Wem gehört Loch Lomond eigentlich?
Das ist eine sehr spannende Frage, weil wir ungefähr seit knapp 2 Jahren zu einem privaten chinesischen Investor gehören. Also wir sind immer noch in privater Hand, das finde ich ganz schön. Vor allen Dingen auch vorher war es die Loch Lomond Group, wo auch Glen Scotia und Little Mill, also die Reste von Little Mill, dazugehören. Und das Team ist 1:1 gleich geblieben. Es hat nur der chinesische Investor hat diese Group quasi aufgekauft. Und man verfolgt immer noch das gleiche Ziel. Es hat sich nichts irgendwie geändert, weil ich die Frage immer wieder komme, seit wann hat sich jetzt dadurch irgendwas geändert? Geht mehr nach Asien oder so? Die Zielrichtungen sind genau die gleichen. Wir werden weiterhin ganz kontinuierlich wachsen und trotz alledem immer noch ein Brand sein, der eher für Genießer und Trinker gemacht ist, als für die Leute, die sich gerne eine Flasche für teuer Geld beiseite stellen wollen, um zu spekulieren, ob sie das teuer verkaufen können.
Wir hatten das vorher schon. Ich war mit im Tasting in der Masterclass und es gibt natürlich die Fassstärken bei Loch Lomond. Es gibt die Single Casks, die was Besonderes sind, aber auch noch die eine oder andere besondere Abfüllung, was die Fass-Finishes angeht. Welche Rolle spielt denn das Fassmanagement?
Das spielt bei uns natürlich eine große Rolle. In der Core Range haben wir immer 3 verschiedene Fässer, immer First Fill Bourbon Fässer, Refill Bourbon Fässer und sogenannte Rejuvenated Fässer. Weil wir nur eine von 4 Brennereien sind, die eine eigene Küferei haben. Und somit können wir halt quasi ausgelaugte Fässer innen drin auskratzen, die auch aus amerikanischer Weißeiche bestehen, die 40, 45 Jahre lang in der Industrie benutzt worden sind. 1 Zentimeter wird ausgekratzt, neu ausgekohlt und dann haben wir so eine Art Virgin Oak, darf sich aber so nicht mehr nennen. Das sind die Fässer, diese 3 Fassarten, die wir immer in der Core Range eigentlich haben. Und so Finishes wie zum Beispiel, keine Ahnung, Pinot de Charon, Limousin, Virgin Oak, das sind alles so Fässer, die wir sehr gerne in unseren Fass-Finish-Serien oder in Single Cast sehr gerne einbauen, dass man da noch eine Besonderheit hat. Aber Hauptaugenmerk liegt eigentlich auf amerikanischer Weißeiche.
Was sind die besonderen Fässer, die ihr habt? Also gibt es dann auch Madeira und Co.?
Madeira war ja bis 2020 auch in unserer Core Range, der Inchmoran Madeira, einer meiner liebsten Whiskys. Ist mittlerweile in den Travel Retail umgezogen, dass man den als Travel Retail bekommt noch nicht mal als Inchmorin-Style, sondern mittlerweile als Loch Lomond-Style mit 15% Rauchmalz. Wir haben, glaube ich, alles von Chateau Lafite über Mouton Rothschild, über Madeira, Masala, Armagnac-Fässer. Also wir haben alle. Ich glaube, die Diversität der Fässer ist enorm bei uns in der Brennerei.
Dürft ihr denn alle draufschreiben oder gibt es dann so, nee, ihr dürft nicht sagen Mouton Rothschild oder sowas?
Also wir haben auch schon für den einen oder anderen Markt, jetzt nicht aktuell für Deutschland, aber wir haben auch schon für den einen oder anderen Markt auf jeden Fall solche Weingüter auch auf die Flasche mitbringen dürfen und das ist gar kein Problem. Ich weiß, dass bei uns im Warehouse noch der ein oder andere Schatz schlummert, wo ich meine Hand so ein bisschen drauf gehalten habe, dass wir so in den nächsten 2-3 Jahren noch solche Sachen auch mal nach Deutschland bekommen werden.
Was ja manchmal ein bisschen schwierig ist, ist bei Destillen, wenn sie Originalabfüllungen und Single Cask machen, dann sagt man immer gleich, ja, fängt so bei 150 Euro oder mehr an und kaufe ich mir dann, stelle ich in den Schrank und so.
Ja, davon kann man sich bei uns auf jeden Fall verabschieden, von diesem Gedanken, weil ich glaube, für diese 120 Euro mehr beim Single Cask kannst du dir eigentlich gleich 2 Flaschen bei uns kaufen. Das ist das Schöne. Also ich kann mal einen kleinen Spoiler machen. In den nächsten 2 Wochen wird es 2 neue Single Casks geben. Einmal einen 9 Jahre alten aus dem Virgin Limousin Oak Fass und einen 11 Jahre alten Peated aus dem Oloroso Fass, jeweils mit 46 Monate Finish in dem jeweiligen Fass. Der aus dem Virgin Oak, der wird sich so bei 59 Euro einpendeln und der Peated Oloroso so bei 65. Also sind wir da sehr human unterwegs.
Genau, ist ja natürlich spannend, sowas, wenn sowas funktioniert. Woher kommt dieser Grundgedanke? Bleibt der bei Loch Lomond auch? Oder wir haben ja jetzt zum 1. April die Erhöhungen der Preise der schottischen Whisky-Industrie. Sagt ihr dann auch, naja, wir wollen uns ja nicht verramschen?
Was heißt verramschen? Also für uns ist es halt einfach so, wenn ich persönlich als Endkonsument mal so ein Augenmerk auf die Whiskys gelegt habe, dann habe ich festgestellt, dass man immer wieder bei Brennereien geguckt hat, so Preiserhöhung, obwohl es eigentlich gar nicht sein musste, weil eigentlich ist die Produktion günstiger als teurer geworden. Wir legen pro Jahr mal 2, mal 5, mal 6 Euro mehr oben drauf und gucken, was ist der Endkonsument bereit zu bezahlen. Und das habe ich bei vielen Brennereien gemerkt, dass die gesehen haben, okay, der Absatz, der geht weiter nach oben. Also warum soll ich den Preis wieder nach unten setzen, wenn die Leute bereit sind, das zu bezahlen? Bei uns ist es so, dass wir seit knapp 10 Jahren keine Preiserhöhung hatten. Wir müssen jetzt das erste Mal minimal mitgehen, das sind vielleicht 2-3 Euro, die wir erhöhen. Das wird der Endkonsument fast gar nicht merken, weil der LEH immer noch oder auch der Fachhandel immer noch ein Spiel hat, an seiner Marge zu arbeiten, dass wir eigentlich immer noch beim gleichen Verkaufspreis liegen wie vor 5-6 Jahren.
Jetzt, wenn ich nach Schottland komme und sage, Loch Lomond schmeckt mir super lecker, ich möchte Inchmurrin und alles vor Ort probieren und in den Visitor Center und die Destille angucken, geht gar nicht, ne?
Ich kann euch sagen, wenn ihr noch mal so 5-6 Jahre wartet, wir arbeiten daran, das wird es bald auch geben, ist bei uns auf der Prioritätsstufe so an Position XY angesetzt, weil gerade auch in Deutschland und auch in anderen Märkten haben wir noch sehr viel Hauptaugenmerk erst auf den Abfüllungen und auf das Brandbuilding, also dass die Leute wieder einen Fokus auf Loch Lomond setzen und wir halt solche Marken wie Glenlivet, Glenfiddich, dass wir uns so ein bisschen so auf Augenhöhe mit denen bewegen. Und dann ist es erstmal nicht Priorität, so ein Visitor Center zu haben. Ich weiß aber, wir arbeiten dran. Und wenn man ein bisschen Geduld hat, so 3-4 Jahre, dann wird man auch die Chance bekommen, sich die Brennerei als Normalsterblicher von innen angucken zu können und Touren zu buchen. Und es ist in Mache.
Aber wir müssen uns gedulden. Wir waren jetzt schon beim Fassmanagement. Wir waren dabei, dass es unterschiedliche Brennmethoden gibt. Was wir uns noch nicht angeguckt haben, ist, wie sieht es denn bei euch mit den Hefen aus? Gibt es die spezielle Loch Lomond-Hefe und natürlich auch die Fermentationszeiten, die entsprechend lang oder auch kurz sind? Experimentiert ihr da tatsächlich ein bisschen?
Also wir experimentieren, glaube ich, wenn ich mir andere Brennereien angucke, am meisten, würde ich sagen. Also gerade viele Brennereien, die nach Ausstoß und nach Verkauf orientiert sind, die gehen so an ihre 52, 60 Stunden maximal. Wir haben grundsätzlich über 100 Stunden Fermentation, weil ab 100 Stunden beginnt eine Zweitfermentation, wo sich mehr Ester bilden. Das heißt, da kriegt man eigentlich diesen fruchtigen Charakter heraus. Klar ist eigentlich Zeit Geld, aber wir sagen, okay, wir wollen lieber ein geschmackvolles, intensives Destillat haben, als lieber zweimal zu destillieren und dadurch mehr Output zu haben. Zusätzlich kommt noch dazu, dass wir sehr viele verschiedene Stills haben und gerade diese verschiedenen Stills auch dann mit verschiedenen Maische-Methoden, wo du gerade die Hefe angesprochen hast, zum Beispiel bei unserem Inchmorin, kommt immer Chardonnay und Sauvignon Blanc Hefe zum Einsatz, die ganz andere Fruchtigkeit die ganz andere Fruchtigkeit herausholt als bei unseren normalen Whiskys. Hauscharakter, Spacer, grüne Apfel, grüne Birne. Inchmorin-Style ist eher Pfirsich, Weinberg-Pfirsich, Mirabelle. Und das haben wir alles der Hefe zu verdanken.
Wo soll es denn noch hingehen in Sachen Loch Lomond?
Wenn ich mal in die Sterne gucken darf, dann würde ich sagen, dass wir uns irgendwann hoffentlich mal auf dem Whiskymarkt in der Region von so tollen Marken wie Glenlivet, Glenfiddich und Co. bewegen werden und dass man gerade auf dem deutschen Markt, was ich immer wieder sehe, dass man sich auf jeden Fall dahin bewegt, dass man Loch Lomond so akzeptiert, dass wir sehr starke, große Varianz, was den Stil anbelangt, auf jeden Fall mit dabei haben. Und dass man eigentlich, wenn man bei mir an den Stand kommt, wenn man mir sagt, das und das mag ich, dass ich demjenigen sofort so einen Whisky einschenken kann.
Nochmal kurz zum rauchigen Whisky. Ihr macht euer Malz nicht selber. Wo kommt denn euer Malz her? Seid ihr über ganz Schottland oder ganz Europa oder drüber hinaus?
Eine sehr schöne Sache, weil ich kenne genug Brennereien, die da eine sehr großes Marketing-Ding rausmachen mit 100% Scottish Barley, dies und das. Wir haben 100% schottische Gerste, wir machen dabei nicht so ein Marketing-Ding raus, sondern für uns ist das halt selbstverständlich, dass wir nichts aus Finnland oder sonst wo importieren, sondern wir haben unser schottisches Malz und vor allen Dingen auch, wenn wir von unserem rauchigen Whisky reden, dann wird das von uns selbst quasi gemälzt unter Torfrauch. Auch das machen nicht mehr viele Brennereien.
Was bleibt denn übrig von den gut 50 ppm, die im Malz sind und was kommt dann in der Flasche im Glas an?
Also wenn wir beim Inchmorin haben wir 55 ppm und das natürlich vorm Einmeischen und allem drum und dran. Ich würde mal sagen, dass wir so zwischen 16 und 17 ppm laut Labor hinterher in der Flasche liegen.
Was fasziniert dich am Thema Whisky persönlich?
Ich finde es einfach unglaublich, wenn man auch jetzt mal wieder hier kurz einen Blick schweifen lässt, wo wir gerade hier sprechen. Wie viele unterschiedliche Menschen, unterschiedliche Altersklassen zusammenfinden, egal was für einen Job du ausübst, egal was für eine Religion du hast, egal, keine Ahnung, was deine Gedanken sind. Sobald du ein Glas Whisky in der Hand hast, unterhältst du dich darum, was hast du da gerade im Glas, wonach schmeckt das, kannst du mir was empfehlen? Also ich sage einfach, Whisky verbindet und Whisky ist einfach total genussreich und ist immer wieder dafür da, um Leute miteinander in Gespräche zu bringen. Und das fasziniert mich unglaublich an Whisky.
Wovon sind die Leute hier auf der Messe bei euch am meisten begeistert im Moment?
Also wenn ich mir unsere Single Casks angucke, die wir jetzt leider nicht mehr verkaufen können, weil wir sind jetzt so Mitte des zweiten Tages, die sind leider schon ausverkauft, würde ich sagen, Single Casks laufen immer, das ist klar in Deutschland. Zusätzlich würde ich sagen, unsere Peated Varianten, die gehen auch immer sehr, sehr gut und gerade unser Peated Grain aus 100% gemälzter Gerste ist jetzt, wenn wir wieder wärmere Tage haben, ein sehr toller Renner mit Tonicwasser und auch Limette. Also auch zum Mixen für 25 Euro die Flasche, ob ich mir einen Gin kaufe oder einen schönen Whisky, kann man auch sehr tolle Mixes rausmachen.
Bei Grain denke ich ja immer sofort an andere Getreidesorten. Du hast das vorhin schon gesagt, warum eigentlich Gerste? Ist doch teurer als Weizen oder so.
Teurer ja, aber auch wenn ich 100% gemälzte Gerste nehme, habe ich auch deutlich mehr Aroma, als wenn ich quasi einen normalen Grain nehme, der theoretisch auch aus einer Mischung aus Weizen, Weiß, alles Mögliche kann das einfach sein. Je nachdem, was ich am günstigsten einkaufe, das muss auch nicht mal reingetreidig sein, sondern das kann wirklich eine Mischung aus verschiedensten Sachen sein. Es ist einfach wesentlich aromatischer und fein strukturierter, wenn ich 100% gemälzte Gerste nehme und das Ganze dann über eine Kolonne destilliere.
Ihr hört Lost and Found auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z. Wir sind unterwegs auf The Village, der Whisky-Messe in Nürnberg und springen jetzt von den schottischen Highlands direkt in die irische Hauptstadt nach Dublin zu Piers Lyons. Das Interview hört ihr im englischen Original.
Hi, I'm Michael Carr and I'm the Global Spirits Ambassador for Piers Lyons Brewing and Distilling.
The distilling happens in Dublin in Ireland. Is there a special place in Dublin for the distillery? Has it any historic roots?
So our distillery is in a church right beside Guinness's in the centre of Dublin. There's been a church on the site for over 800 years. We have a large graveyard around our church and we've been distilling in the church since 2017. So Dr. Lyons, Pierce Whiskey is named after Dr. Lyons. He discovered when he bought the church that his family were buried in the graveyard. So I think there's seven different members of his family buried in the graveyard.
Okay. So what's special about the Pierce Whiskey? So I heard you have a column still as well as pot stills.
Yeah, so we don't have a column still. We have pot still. a normal pot still. Then we have another pot still with a hybrid. It's a hybrid still, so there's a column on top of the pot. So that gives us a very, very smooth new make. And then it makes it very, very easy for us to get lots of nice, interesting barrel influences and stuff like that. But it's a very unique. And actually, when we brought it into Ireland, the stills are made by Vendome in Kentucky. When we brought the stills into Ireland, they weren't officially allowed to be used for Irish whiskey. We had to get the technical file on Irish whiskey amended so our stills could. So they're very, very unique.
And there's something unique as well, because you do a double distillation, I heard.
Yeah, well, it's not really that unique. A lot of distilleries in Ireland would double distill, a lot of distilleries in Ireland triple distill. Because of the way our stills are, with that hybrid still, with the column on top of the on top of the pot, we don't feel the need to go to triple distillation to get that smoothness. Our whiskey is very, very smooth already. Okay.
So, an interesting point always is where does the materials, the raw materials, come from? And you try to be open to the public where you get your resources.
Yeah, well, so we grow all our own barley, we grow all our own wheat, we grow all our own rye, we grow all our own oats, but we get our corn for our blend, we get the corn from France, because it's non-GMO in France. We grow all our own barley. We do not malt it ourselves. We have a company called Loughran's that malt it for us, and they mill it for us, and then we come in and we brew it and distill it in the church.
So now here at the Whiskey Fair in Nuremberg, we have a small range of your whiskies. It's not so small. And I was wondering, because it's a 12-year-old.
Yeah, so our 12-year-old, obviously our distillery wasn't open 12 years ago. So what we've done there is, or what Dr. Lyons did was, he sourced 50 barrels from a very good friend of his, John Teeling, a good few years ago. And he took those and he put them into our own barrels, because we're lucky enough to have a sister distillery in Lexington, Kentucky. So it means that we have access to their bourbon barrels. So he took this whiskey, this 12-year-old whiskey, single malt, and he took it from the barrels that were in after 4 or 5 years and put it into our barrels and left it to bring it up to the 12 years, 13 years as it is now.
Okay. And what about the 7 and the 5 years?
So the 7 and the 5, that's our own malt. They're blended whiskies. We source our grain from a distillery called West Cork. And the 7-year-old is quite unique for us in that it has a small amount of sherry cask, which is common enough in Irish whiskey. But also, because we have the distillery in Kentucky, there's a brewery beside it. That distillery will mature their bourbon, bottle it, and then they put ale into those casks, and they leave it there for 12 weeks or so, and then they sell that ale as a whiskey, Kentucky bourbon barrel ale, yeah, and then we take those barrels and we use them for our whiskey. So they've been used for bourbon first, then ale, and then for our whiskey. So it gives it a lovely sweet taste. With the 5-year-old, it's basically the same, but instead of using ale cask, we use Kentucky stout casks, so it gives you a chocolatey kind of flavor.
So can you tell a little bit more about the casks? So you get the complete casks, or?
Yeah, so, well, yeah, we ship our casks from the US in complete. We don't collapse them down. We always leave a little bit in the bottom to keep them moist as well. And because we're so small, like we're a tiny distillery, we don't have to get so many casks. So every few months we get a container full of casks, and we ship those casks refrigerate so that they come over absolutely perfect to us. And then sometimes we have some small sherry casks, we have some cognac casks and stuff like that. We're experimenting with at the moment, and there'll be whiskies that come out with that over time.
And what about the warehouses?
Yeah, we use 2 different warehouses. We obviously wouldn't have space in Dublin to mature our own whiskey.
So in the church.
No, unfortunately not. That would be cool. We mature our whiskey with 2 different places. One is in County Wexford and one is County Cork. And they're both old traditional bonded warehouses. So we just basically split it 50-50 and send it down to each of them. So the idea behind that is to see if there is any influence from the different areas, we'll be able to blend it out anyway, you know, that kind of way.
Is there something special about your yeast?
Yes, that's a good question. So Dr. Lyons, it was a scientist, and he was a yeast specialist. So we use our own special yeast in our, all our brewing and in all our distilling. So we're very, very lucky like that. He founded a company called Alltech, which is a bioscience, biopharmacy kind of company. And they are world leaders in producing yeast. So we're really lucky that we get to access their yeast.
And you brew some beer, you told us. So is there some beer and whiskey cask as well?
Yeah, so we have a brewery in Dundalk in County Louth, and we're always experimenting. So we have beer in whiskey casks, and then we have whiskey in beer casks. So we have both of those. We released a couple of years ago, we released an Imperial Stout in Pierce whiskey casks. And we have another one of those coming, I think later this year. I hope I'm not letting that out of the bag, but I think we have another Imperial Stout. We're also going to have some IPA cask stuff, and we'll see. We're experimenting, so we can do lots of things.
And you're going to have the highest whiskey tasting in the world next year, or this year maybe?
Yeah, this is going to be amazing. So basically, we're going to book a flight from Nuremberg to Ireland. And Marika is going to do a tasting on the flight. It's going to be the highest ever whiskey tasting, and then people will be able to come to Dublin, come to our distillery, and actually experience the whole thing.
So let's talk about the strengths of the whiskey. We have the 43% volume. Why that? Why not 46? Or maybe some cask strengths? Or will there be different strengths?
We will probably do cask strength. We are looking at cask strength at the moment. The reason we pick 43 is because we don't have to chill filter it if it's at 43. So it just, we don't have to do anything. We don't like playing with the whiskies. Once they are in the wood and then into the bottle, we want to leave them alone. We don't want to be chill filtering. We don't want to be adding color. We don't want to do anything like that. So 43 was just nice for us. 46, a lot of companies go to 46. When we looked at it, we were looking at 46. But just because of the way the Irish tax system goes, it gets a bit ridiculous in price when you push up to that kind of level. So 43 was just perfect for us for a premium whiskey, no chill filtering, no coloring, no nothing like that.
Okay. So if you look into the future, what's next? So 5, 7, 12 years and?
Probably not anything older at the moment. We will have, we're going to be collaborating hopefully with our sister distillery in Kentucky. So that's something that's coming down the line. I'm not really allowed to talk about that too much. We will have, like I say, some of the beer barrel finishes and that could be before the end of the year. And we might also have maybe a single grain we might look at as well. We're talking about that. So we'll see. The grain will be very interesting because it'll highlight and showcase our casks. So we've lots of things in lots of pots on the boil. We have to see which comes to fruition first.
Is it easy to visit the distillery in Dublin?
Yeah, very easy. We're anybody who visits Dublin will most likely be heading towards the Guinness Brewery, and we're just across the road from that.
Falls ihr in Dublin vorbeischauen wollt bei Pierce Lyons, dann informiert euch vorher im Web unter Pierce Lyons Distillery. einwort.com. Und das war auch schon die erste Stunde Lost and Found in der Aprilausgabe 2022. Auch in der zweiten Stunde werden wir auf The Village, der Whisky-Messe in Nürnberg, unterwegs sein und da geht's dann unter anderem auch auf die Pueblo del Ron und um das Thema rum. Mehr Infos zu dieser Sendung findet ihr auch im Web unter lost-end-found.radio-z.net oder ihr schaut auf der Z-Homepage vorbei www.radio-z.net.